across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Who's ready for Friday? Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north. Just gorgeous up here. 49 degrees, a little on the cool side, but after last weekend's heat and humidity, it's kind of a nice break. On this Friday, July 7th, let's look at some temperatures around the area right now. You go up to Hayward, folks listening on the Buzz of the North, it's 42 degrees in Hayward right now, 48 in Richland Center. Madison reporting 56, Oshkosh 54, and Wausau coming in at 50 degrees for folks listening on Bull Falls Radio. Here's what's on tap this morning. We'll begin with some imaginary Supreme Court cases. When right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was legal for a website designer to discriminate against potential LGBTQ customers, it turns out they were ruling about a situation that didn't exist. The same-sex couple seeking a wedding website was made up. It's only the latest situation that has more Americans questioning the legitimacy of a court that has struck down women's health care rights. It has struck down colleges' efforts to have a diverse student body, even as some of the justices are mired in ethical suspicion. And we'll talk to Kia Vakil about that. In our second hour, we'll talk to Mark Jacob about how national media outlets can't stop rooting for a recession despite no shortage of positive economic data. There was more yesterday, another healthy batch showing that things are going well, but all the negative messaging out there has people thinking otherwise. Are these newsrooms simply craving conflict, or are they bending over backwards in order to both sides a healthy economy and not make conservatives upset? Mark will discuss his new column for Courier Newsroom called Facts or Feelings Inside the Media's Misleading Economic Coverage. Dan Schumacher slated to join us as well. And along the way, if you'd like to join us, 844-967-2789 is the phone number here in the studio. The email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you're watching the live video feed of the radio show, especially on one of our Facebook pages, you can leave a comment there. And if we see it, we may put that up on screen and respond to it as well. Down to Madison we go, where Aaron Zommers is standing by on what was a very short work week for me, not quite as short for you, but still happy to have the weekend coming along. And do you make other plans, or were we so close to the holiday weekend that, you know, you're just kicking back this time around?
I will be going to Manitowoc again because one of my friends came down from Manitowoc to help me move last week, and his transmission got a leak. So his truck's in the shop. I will be driving it up to Manitowoc, and then another one of my friends who lives here will be driving back with me. So extra driving.
But you're doing a good deed.
Yes. Yeah. And it's also for someone who just helped me, even if I wasn't, I would be willing to do it anyway, but still.
But that's what friends are for. I'm waiting for Dionne Warwick and Elton John to come in here and start singing to us. But you do, you're a good person, Aaron. Don't let all my kidding tell you otherwise.
Well, thanks, I guess.
It just means I don't have any lingering bitterness about the surprise party and getting confetti all over my carpet.
That's good. I'm glad.
Yeah, because you were such a co-conspirator in that. Hey, on Up North News social media posts right now, you can see the story of the police officer in the Sturgeon Bay area who rescued cows from a burning barn. We also show you a 9-year-old girl in Pittsburgh, a Rowdy Tellez fan, and how she was able to get one of Rowdy's bats from him while she was rooting for him in their recent series against the Pirates. And there are also some weekend events ideas all over at the Up North News social feeds. Look on Facebook and Instagram. Maybe it's on Threads too. I spent so much of yesterday, you know, just kind of building up my new Threads account and just watching everybody enjoy being on a new platform because of what has happened to Twitter. And I swear I went on Twitter, I don't know, maybe 4 times yesterday. And every time my feed was nothing but like Robin Voss tweets at random people and other right wingers. It's almost like it, like everybody emptied out except the Fox News crowd is all that's left on Twitter, the folks who didn't already join Trump on his tiny social media network. And meanwhile, over on Threads, it's, you know, it's like Princess Jasmine singing A Whole New World, and it's been rather nice. So we will have an Up North News account there. I know there's a Civic Media account on Threads as well. So if you're just getting going, there's a bit of a learning curve. Aaron, I'm trying so hard not to always be the old guy here, but I was reading the instructions from my editor-in-chief at Up North News, and I love Kim. And she was trying to be helpful in how do you post a GIF on Threads, because it's not all that intuitive. And so her instructions about downloading the Giphy keyboard and then setting the Giphy keyboard to give it all access, and then knowing that you have to paste it in this part of the thread and not the other part of the thread. Now, to a young person, that's like, okay, fine, that's what I'll do. But I think your brain at some point goes, no, I don't want to learn anything else. But I did. And I was very proud of myself.
Well, there we go. You got it all figured out. I think you're a lot more tech savvy than, I don't know.
Than the average bear? Yeah. I hope. I hope. But I am understanding now that feeling as you get a little bit older of like, do I need to learn that? Am I really going to use that? We'll see. Hey, we have some news headlines to talk about. There's some real whining going on out there about Governor Evers and his veto pen. We'll have that story and much more just ahead on this Friday morning. You're Up North. A little Friday dose of Steely Dan. When Black Friday comes. Although I would dare say there's nothing, you know, black about this Friday. It's gorgeous up here. We're in the 40s in many cases around the state, and we'll get a full updated forecast all across Wisconsin from Weatherology coming up exactly 1 hour from now. You can sign up for the Up North News daily newsletter. Comes out around 5 a.m. And on the newsletter today, as often happens on Fridays, links to some of the stories we covered throughout the week in case you missed them. They include my summary of some of the things that are in the final state budget signed by Governor Evers this week, some of the things that are not in the budget bill, and also a story on why Governor Tony Evers will be part of a news story 400 years from now. There might be Jetsons-like flying cars. Maybe the news is delivered telepathically. There will be many changes in state budgets. But if there is a Wisconsin 402 years from now and a state budget, there will be a news story about what Tony Evers did this year for folks dealing with the year 2024-25. So again, that's in our newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Kia Vakil is coming up in just a bit with some of the political headlines from the week. Other headlines that I wanted to tackle today, well, first on the fun side, the racing sausages turn 30 this year, which was so unique at the time. And well, frankly, it still is. And I don't know that it was the first. I dare say it probably wasn't, but certainly among the most well-known what you would call baseball mascots and activities that go on. And that would be the racing sausages. You know, if you're doing something about the Brewers, you would not be surprised to hear about racing, you know, beer steins or racing cows, you know, here in America's Dairyland. But somebody came up with the idea to feature, you know, the original three sausages, the Brat, the Italian, and the Polish. And since that time, the chorizo and the hot dog have been added as they all race toward the finish line at some point in a Brewers game that first debuted June 27th, 1993. So just a little bit past the 30th anniversary when this was going on at County Stadium. Of course, it carried over to Miller Park, now American Family Field. And there will be a bit of a celebration, a commemoration tonight before the Brewers game with the Cincinnati Reds. Now, before we get to the Brewers and the Reds, we have to tie a bow on the Brewers series with the Cubs. a four-game series that ended yesterday afternoon, and the Brewers' Victor Caratini hit a tie-breaking home run in the eighth inning, and the Brewers recovered from a blown three-run lead to beat the Cubs 6-5 yesterday and gain a split in that four-game series. Milwaukee had led 4-1 in the sixth inning, and they were even up 5-3 in the eighth inning before Chicago's Yan Gomes hit a two-run dinger that tied it up, and then that was followed, thankfully, by Caratini's difference maker. Freddie Peralta allowed 3 runs, 4 hits, and 3 walks in 5 1/3 innings. He matched his season high of 10 strikeouts. Now, Milwaukee's next 6 games are against the division-leading Cincinnati Reds. Corbin Burnes will be on the mound tonight at American Family Field. The Brewers host the Reds for 3 games this weekend. Then comes the All-Star break, and then when we pick things up, the Brewers will be in Cincinnati for a series there. So, much like a week or so ago when we were in Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh was leading the division when we went into Pittsburgh. We were leading the division by the time the Brewers left town. Maybe the same thing can happen over these next 6 games with the Reds. You can catch it all on WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center or Oshkosh Air Support throughout the Fox Valley. We wanted to wish a very happy 77th wedding anniversary to Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, the first couple, the longest married, oldest first couple ever. They are certainly facing health challenges. The 39th president of the United States is 98 years old now, and he is in home hospice care. The former first lady is 95 and has dementia. The Carter family did not offer a lot of details on Jimmy or Rosalind Carter's conditions, but said they both enjoyed spending some time with each other, along with a stream of family members and occasional visits from close friends. And a grandson said it's been really wonderful to see the outpouring of support and respect and love. And I hope that more people take time to appreciate that, because Jimmy Carter was a national punching bag for a long time and still remains so to some folks who really have nothing better to do with their lives and don't appreciate the way that the election of 1980, Carter versus Reagan, really was a fork in the road for our nation, with, you know, Jimmy Carter on one shoulder saying, you know, follow this way, and Ronald Reagan on the other one saying, you know, materialism's a good thing. You can own that 3-ton pickup truck, and you know, you don't have to worry that there's going to be gas and oil forever. And, you know, so many other things about shrinking government and drowning it in a bathtub. And, you know, folks listened the way that they did. And I think that history will eventually judge the Carter administration a little bit more kindly than what you might hear portrayed in certain media outlets. Want to congratulate some unknown soul out in the Muskego area for winning a $50,000 Powerball ticket. It was sold for Wednesday's drawing and matched the Powerball and matched 4 out of the 5 numbers, which is great to win the $50,000, but you got to be thinking about that fifth digit and, you know, whether was it random? Did they pick it because of lucky numbers or birthdays or whatever the case may be? The odds of winning the $50,000 prize are 1 in 900,000. So it certainly, obviously, it does happen from time to time. And it happened here to somebody who remains unidentified in Muskego. But, you know, congratulations to them just the same. All right, turning our attention to Governor Tony Evers and the state budget, and deciding to sign it, which is not sitting well with some folks, especially education advocates and others in certain progressive circles that were spoiling for more of a fight. The governor said, look, there are enough good things in here that we don't want to jeopardize. He was able to use 51 partial vetoes to alter the document in some significant ways. And I'll tell you, one of those ways sure has Republicans' hair on fire. You know, I should say the Republican politicians. Again, I don't know that a lot of our Republican friends and neighbors were saying, hey, for those 11 billionaires in the state, let's give them literally a 7-figure tax cut. I don't know that anybody was necessarily asking for that. But to hear Republican legislators tell it, this might be the end of the republic. And the fact that the governor not only took away the monster tax cut for the top brackets, but that he also altered the school funding in a way that guarantees at least a basic level of support for the next 400 years. Honestly, I talked before about Republican Twitter. Republican Twitter is, well, I guess it's all a Twitter would be one way to put it, but the vitriol, the anger, the complete amnesia over what's been done with partial vetoes by Republican governors in the past is, I mean, it's almost delicious. Scott Walker at one point turned a one-year moratorium on some minor thing in the budget into a thousand-year moratorium, and you didn't hear boo out of Republican legislators back then. If anything, you would have expected something more about reacting to just one of the vetoes that was an earmark. Now, Republicans love to talk about being against budget earmarks. I'm one of those people that I'm very much for budget earmarks. I'm simply for transparency in them. I want to know who requested it so you can hold them accountable. None of these, you know, these secret earmarks used to be the regular thing in generations past. Well, anyway, there was an earmark in there for $1 million for work on a dam in the Assembly District of Speaker Robin Voss, and the governor vetoed that particular one. I don't have the veto message in front of me to see what he said about that, but I'm sure that it had something to do with setting priorities on capital projects, and I'm sure it had something to do with lines of take that, you know, to Robin Voss. And, you know, as other people have noted, it's at least a little proof that the governor has a sense of humor in the way that he does these vetoes. Others, you know, he was a bit more clear on why he did what he did. For example, there had been a proposal to merge colleges in West Bend, both the UW-Milwaukee campus for Washington County and also the Moraine Park Technical College. And there's been a lot of discussion about the two-year centers in the UW system. Are they healthy? Is this merger with the four-year campuses working? Do you need to do something else? Do you need to close some, like the controversy over Richland Center? Well, Republicans in the budget took it upon themselves to say that there would be a merger between the UW school in West Bend and the technical college in that area. And Governor Evers used one of his partial vetoes on that. And he says it quite well. He says, "I object to the legislature singling out only one of our state's branch campuses when many campuses are facing challenges, in part due to the legislature's repeated failure to provide an adequate level of funding for the University of Wisconsin system." What he's saying is, you yahoos have plenty of time to actually cut UW funding because you didn't like that there are diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that are helping to make our campuses more diverse. You were able to be that petty, but you also found the time to take it upon yourself to create a merger between a tech college and a UW school. How about you work on funding both of these systems? I mean, remember, it was just a couple of weeks back, never mind the UW system cut. It was a couple of weeks back that a reporter discovered how Republicans were basically trying to sneak through a very radical change in how technical colleges are funded. And again, would have made the technical college system as vulnerable to spur of the moment budget cuts as the UW system is, which right now can have their budget cut just based on the whims of Robin Voss or anybody else in the legislature. Now, that didn't go through, but it showed their intentions. And this merger didn't go through, but again, it showed their intentions to focus on basically micromanaging institutions and local governments rather than actually supporting them, providing resources, helping them with, you know, workforce and job creation and everything else that would be good to the long term of the economy. Instead, it's always short-term party politics, which helped no one and basically, you know, cried out for the vetoes that Governor Evers gave them. All right, we'll turn toward a more national focus with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. We'll talk about recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions, Ron DeSantis's not-so-great week, and much more right after this break. You're up north. It wouldn't be Friday, even in a short work week, if we didn't check in with our friend Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. For those of you relatively new to the show, Courier Newsroom is the parent company of Up North News and has 8 state-based outlets all around the state. And so Kia from California covers the goings-on not just in Wisconsin, but Arizona, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Florida, Iowa, and Virginia. Kia, I don't know how you do it, but good morning.
Good morning. I do not do it all myself. That's how I do it.
I was going to say it's all about the teamwork. You can do a lot of teamwork over Slack, and that's exactly what we do. So as you're covering the national stories and looking at them, you know, for all of us state newsrooms back home, certainly one of the big centers of attention last week was the U.S. Supreme Court. It was the end of their term, putting out multiple different cases. So let's start with one that is a bit about LGBTQ, rights and the right to discriminate. And apparently, allegedly, this case turns out to be based in part on something that didn't actually happen. And there was all this chatter like, oh, they should throw that decision out. And then other people saying, it's not really enough to throw the case out. So do you mind giving a little bit of background on what this imaginary part of the Supreme Court case was?
Yeah, absolutely. So on late last week, the court ruled that a web designer based in Colorado could deny web, production services to same-sex couples. And this was based in a case that she filed, or, she was the main plaintiff in Colorado, where she said, she, because of her Christian belief, she did not feel comfortable creating designs containing a message with which she disagrees. And she said her faith required her to turn away customers seeking same-sex wedding-related services. But in her case, this lawsuit was filed in 2016. And, at that time, she had never designed any websites for weddings. But she claimed in court filings that she got contacted by a same-sex couple named Stuart and Mike, requesting those services. And that was, pretty much the basis of this case. But apparently no lawyer or judge or anyone ever contacted either Stuart or Mike until a reporter from the New Republic, which is a more progressive media outlet, recently reached out to Stuart. And it turns out he never made an inquiry. He is not gay. He has been married to a woman, and he does not live in Colorado and did not then. So pretty much it's a completely fake filing. It's unclear if, the woman made it up, her attorneys made it up. She's represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a very right-wing religious Christian group. And it's a pretty bizarre situation, especially because, it seems to be like this thing never existed, this request, and it opens the door for, potential discrimination against LGBTQ people in other states based on a fake filing.
It does, though the defenders of the ruling are pointing out that what they were bringing the case up for wasn't so much the individual Stuart in this case, but for the concept that at some point they would be committing a crime if they refused service, which, again, is that a technicality or what? It just made a lot of people angry that, due diligence wasn't done to find out if there was even a there before ruling on the concept of what is there.
Yeah, because when you're doing that can be applied to almost anything. A case you're trying to preemptively basically avoid a law based on a scenario that's made up. Mm-hmm. So if you apply that to other aspects of life or the law or the world, like, what does anything mean anymore? Like, if you can just create, make something up and get the Supreme Court to rule the way you want it to rule, then very few things are really safe, if that's the metric we're using.
Then another case from this past week that dealt with affirmative action programs at two different universities, the Supreme Court, again, in a very predictable ideological split, set that notion back a ways, and again, did so in a way that raised a lot of hackles. And I mean, I was one of them saying on Friday, apparently the Supreme Court said, hey, racism doesn't exist anymore. It's all solved at the institutional level, which is... I grant you hyperbolic, but you understand the sentiment behind it.
I mean, it's not really hyperbolic when you look at their decisions over the last decade. You know, they gutted the Voting Rights Act pretty infamously because John Roberts argued that the environment that justified it no longer exists, i.e., you know, we've solved racism, which clearly is we have not. So yeah, this, you know, by effectively banning affirmative action at these two schools, it effectively bans it nationwide. And, you know, affirmative action has been shown to help give Black, Latino, and Native American students a chance at getting into sort of elite public schools and private schools. We've seen at the University of Michigan and University of California, Berkeley, what happens when affirmative action is banned. Some states don't allow it. And their minority populations have plummeted of students because, you know, surprise, surprise, our educational systems in this country have historically advantaged white people, just like a lot of our other systems. And so, you know, without active efforts to kind of make it possible for Black, Latino, Native students to get in, they won't. And, you know, you could argue that, you know, affirmative action was flawed, that, you know, in an ideal world, we wouldn't need it. And that's true. But we also, you know, we have legacy admissions, which help rich white male primarily students get into places they have no business attending based on the merits. So, you know, it's just if we want it to really to be fully merit driven, then OK, but let's get rid of legacy admissions. Let's actually make it merit driven. Let's, you know, this country wants to be based on that, but isn't right now.
Exactly. And I think that's what really gets to some people is they're doing what they can to set back some people. Mm-hmm. But there are other folks who get to continue doing the questionable things that they're doing, whether we're talking about legacy admissions or if we're talking about the ethics of the justices themselves to be able to go so right wing against, you know, fellow Americans and yet not have anything brought to account for, you know, what they've accepted in terms of, you know, vacations and whatnot from mega donors who are, you know, mega millionaires, I should say, who may have business before the court. The whole thing just really erodes public confidence, as we see in a continuing string of Marquette polls about how fewer people believe in the legitimacy of this court.
No, it's a partisan political ideological court. And, you know, let's be honest here, for most of American history, it's been that way. It's really, and for most of American history, it's favored big business interests, wealthy interests, certainly not Black people are minorities. You know, the court's history of rulings is pretty appalling with those regards until, you know, the 1950s. We went through a, you know, 4 or 5 decade period where the court actually sought to uphold the promise of America, and now that's being rolled back. And whether it's affirmative action, whether it's greenlighting discrimination against gay people, whether it's, you know, reinterpreting a law from 20 years ago to rob 40 million people of debt relief, of student debt relief, the court is doing what the Federalist Society wants it to do, which is, you know, this super right-wing judicial advocacy group that put all 6 of these judges on the bench because they support big business and they support, you know, far right social policy.
And that's what we're going to have for this court for some time to come, because, again, It's about presidential elections, and we, you know, we don't elect Supreme Court justices, we elect presidents, and this is what we got. Well, I shouldn't, it's not just Trump, it's what Mitch McConnell did, you know, with the Senate as well. And it's something that we're just going to have to deal with. Let's turn now to the 2024 presidential campaign. Not a lot that went on this past week, except that I guess Florida Governor Ron DeSantis didn't have a great week. I will admit, I saw a little bit of chatter that something didn't go well for him. I honestly didn't care enough to look into it because I knew I could talk to you. So would you fill in me and all the other, it's a classic case of, I read this stuff so you don't have to. Kia, you had to read about Ron DeSantis's not so great week. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, many things happened. It's Ron DeSantis. He is running a campaign that is, you know, every week doing something that's, you know, costing him in the polls. But the main issue, one of the main issues from last week was the super PAC that's affiliated with his campaign, Never Back Down, technically independent from it, but they're supporting him, posted a video to Twitter that effectively compares Ron DeSantis to the serial killer from American Psycho in a positive light, let me say. And other, you know, deeply unwell figures, basically trying to paint DeSantis's anti-LGBTQ policies and anti-trans policies as a positive thing. And people need to watch this video because it's one of the most deranged things I've ever seen a campaign or a PAC celebrate, because it's effectively, you know, they compare him to Achilles in the story of Troy. Basically being like, our guy is the worst person you've ever met, and that's why he's great. And so they effectively are trying to make Trump seem soft on being terrible to trans people, saying DeSantis is more terrible, and that's, you know, a good thing. And he's gotten a lot of blowback for it because, you know, even if he didn't put it out, the PAC that supports him did. And, you know, this is just the latest in a lot of questionable decisions from that PAC, from his campaign. You know, they're targeting wokeness, they're targeting LGBTQ people. They have no plan for actually how to help people struggling paycheck, living paycheck to paycheck. Miami is one of the most unaffordable cities in the country. Housing is a crisis everywhere in this country, and he has no plan on that, even in his own state, where he actually could contribute to the change. So it's just the latest in a really bizarre set of campaign decisions.
It really is. And again, your constituency, you continue to limit it. And now it's, at some point, it's just going to be, you know, the Moms for Liberty group, which I guess is still... Didn't they have a speaker just a day or two ago? Again, speaking favorably about, you know, Hitler and other dictators who are just kind of misunderstood. A quick, can we get some free advice to anybody in politics? That's never the way to go, is to talk about world authoritarian leaders, dictators being misunderstood. Hasn't worked. Never going to work. Please stop trying it.
Yeah, and I will note that that comes, I don't know, a week after Moms for Liberty chapter, and I think it was Indiana, I think, don't hold me to it, quoted Hitler on their flyer without context, in a way that very much conveyed it was a positive quote. It boggles the mind. I mean, just don't quote Hitler. That's like a pretty basic...
Just don't. Yes. If you get nothing, if you get up Friday mornings at 6:30 and learn nothing else from us, don't quote Hitler. It's just not that tough. Anyway, I'm sorry. We do try because there's good news to report as well. And I'm glad that you get to see some of this, you know, the potential, everything from the potential of electric vehicles in Arizona to the progress that's being made in Michigan with a, you know, a Democratic legislature and governor. So I think I better end on that note that, you know, you don't have a little black rain cloud above you, despite what some people joke, you know, about to you, that you get to cover the progress that's made in some of the states as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing, I think it was last week, you know, the federal government announced massive investments to expand broadband all across the country. Arizona is really booming in the electric vehicle sector and the microchip sector. Michigan, you know, manufacturing and construction workforce are thriving. Unemployment rates are, you know, plunging all across the country steadily over the last year, 2 years. I mean, things are going well. You know, there's every week there's a new story about how the Inflation Reduction Act is driving domestic investments in manufacturing and construction and solar energy and taking away business from Europe. And if you want America to transition to clean energy, to fight climate change, to be economically successful in the 21st century, those are good things. We have a lot of problems in this country, certainly. But, you know, there's also a lot of progress being made.
Exactly. Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Thank you for the time, as always. Have a great weekend.
You too.
You're up north. It was 1 week ago that we said the number one album this day in 1984 was Sports by Huey Lewis and the News. The number one song a week later in 1984 was by Prince, When Doves Cry. It was Prince's very first chart topper, the song being from an upcoming movie, a little ditty by the name of Purple Rain. Things would only get more interesting for Prince from that moment on. On this day in 1456, Joan of Arc was given a retrial, and she was acquitted of heresy. Only problem is the retrial and the acquittal came 25 years after she was burned at the stake. So,
a little late there, buddy.
You know, we talk about the wheels of justice, a criminal justice system. It isn't just Merrick Garland. It dates way, way back. When we talk about something being, you know, as good as sliced bread or something like that, yeah, there's a date for that. Sliced bread was sold for the first time on July 7th, 1928, by the Chillicothe Baking Company in Missouri. So, sliced bread.
You know what's older than sliced bread? Cheez-Its.
Really?
Cheez-Its were first sold in 1921.
Oh, so Cheez-Its are 102 years old, and sliced bread is only 95 years old. Got that going for us. On this day in 1940, a Beatle was born. Happy birthday to Richard Starkey. We know him better as Ringo Starr. And he is 83 years old today. On this day in 1969, John Lennon releases Give Peace a Chance, a song that he and Yoko and a chorus of guests recorded at their bed-in in a Montreal hotel room. It was on this day in 1958 that President Eisenhower signed the Alaska Statehood Act into law, getting set to give the U.S. 49 states and 49 stars on the flag. And I know there's a 49-star design. It sure wasn't around very long because Hawaii was quick on its heels. This New York-born but California-raised singer turns 60. And when I tell you it's Vonda Shepard and you hear this song, you're going to think of a TV show. Yes, it's Ally McBeal. Vonda Shepard was a relative unknown, but was not only the singer behind the theme song to Ally McBeal, but was also the bar singer in many of the episodes. And then she went on to have a nice little career herself in the 90s. She also had a great duet with Dan Hill called Can't We Try? Comedian Jim Gaffigan is 57 years old today. It was on this day in 1981. That President Reagan nominated Sandra Day O'Connor to become the first woman to serve on the United States Supreme Court. On this day in 1985, Boris Becker became the youngest male player ever to win Wimbledon at the age of just 17. The number one hit from this day in 1973 was by Billy Preston. Same. this day in 2009, after a private ceremony at Forest Lawn Cemetery, Michael Jackson's public funeral was held at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. And there's your music break. There's your history lesson for this July 7th of 2023. A couple of days now past the wedding anniversary for myself and for Sherry. We finally went out to dinner last night to one of our very favorite restaurants, Mona Lisa's on Water Street in Eau Claire. And we had to laugh, but we've been going there for so long that we did have our waiter take our picture sitting at the table because we, for the longest time, except now I can't find it, we had one of the pictures that was on our wall was from our 10th wedding anniversary, which was also at Mona Lisa's, also on the back patio there. And I was looking around last night to find it so I could put up, you know, a little, you know, before and after. And I don't know where it went in moving everything around. And maybe it would have just been depressing to see what I looked like 27 years ago compared to now. But regardless, we laughed as well because we have been getting, you have a favorite. And I'm sure a lot of you are like this. So you have a certain restaurant where you just have a favorite and you don't wander off. You know, maybe you did in the beginning, but once you find what you like, you like. I mean, when Sherry goes to Cancun restaurant here in Chippewa Falls, you know, it's the Dom burrito with steak every time, you know, nothing else. And we've been doing that because once in a great while, it's almost like superstition when you wander off and you go, oh, that sounds interesting. Let me try that. And of course it either, you know, just doesn't live up to expectations or you find out that you're missing the thing that you like most. And for us, that also includes our respective entrees. Mine's a pasta puttanesca with Italian sausage, but there's also an appetizer, which is nothing but a small truckload of roasted garlic. That is, you know, like in a little ramekin, you know, they pop the bulbs out of the clove, but when it's roasted just right, of course, it's spreadable. And then they serve it with this tomato chutney and a cambazola cheese. And you put that on, you know, these crackers or flatbread that they give you. And I mention all this simply to say again about the passage of time. What garlic does to somebody when they've been married 10 years versus when they've been married for 37. I'm a little sleep deprived right now because of what the impact of certain foods have now. I mean, I almost never get, you know, a tomato based sauce because I really should buy stock in Pepsid, it seems, with some of the dishes that you get out there. And garlic was kind of the same way. And we both remember, speaking of Jim Gaffigan, whose birthday it is today, whenever he talks about a Hot Pocket, Aaron, have you ever heard Jim Gaffigan's routine on Hot Pockets?
I don't think I have. I've heard some of his stuff, but not that.
It's so good. And at one point, he's the shame that you feel afterwards where he's like, did I eat it or did I wear it? And, you know, the next morning after you eat that much garlic, you can run your finger along your cheek and it feels like you can just spread the garlic right off coming out of your pores, you know, and we laugh about it. But I'm going to tell you, we loved it last night and we're going to order it again the next time we go there. And just bear in mind, maybe we should take the Pepsid before we go to the restaurant instead of afterwards. Because again, when you got something you like, it doesn't even matter if it's out there beating up your body, you know, as it works its way through. You like what you like for dinner and you stick with that. I have so totally frightened Aaron into hitting middle age at this point.
Oh, I was already frightened.
You should do it. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't come with a manual. So I'm just providing the manual of things to expect when you get to this age. You're still going to like things, but you know, there's a price to be paid. Let's take a break for news, weather. We'll have more coming up on our 7 o'clock hour. You're up north.